Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
Fire the tire.
G'day, it's Tan from Oz, and you're listening to Go for Gold, coming to you live from Australia. Today, you have the opportunity to talk not only to myself, but today's special guest, Kevin Gammy, and all you have to do is dial in on 646-716-7879. That's 646-716-7979. And today, we're going to talk to somebody who knows what it's like to overcome overwhelm, what it's like to manage your business so that you can actually make money, and how to get clarity, not only in your life, but in your business as well. So I'd like to welcome our guest, Kevin Gammy. How are you, Kevin?
I'm really well, Tanya, and yourself?
I'm great. So, Kevin, today we're going to be discussing some deeply personal issues for you, which were really life-changing. How do you feel about that?
I look a little bit nervous, to be honest, but we'll be fine.
I'm sure you will be, because we're also going to talk about how you've overcome business challenges and self-sabotage. We're also going to allow people to ask questions. And we've got some people who have actually put their questions on Facebook, so we'll get to those in a little while. But, Kevin, you're not only a mentor and coach for small businesses, you are also an author. So congratulations on your recent launch of your book. Tell us all about it, because that's really exciting.
It is really exciting. So as you know, and you were part of a group that helped me put the foundations of my book together. It's called Finding Your Business Mojo, and it's about helping small business owners get really focused, get clear, build their confidence so that they're dealing with people. And I love it. I got a letter from the State Library recently saying, hey, your book's in the State Library. So that was very exciting. I was almost in tears.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's great, because people don't always realize what a hard slog it is to actually sit down and not only write the book. Sometimes that can be the easy part, but the process that you have to go through to actually get it to publishing stage.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got to be honest, there was a lot of self-doubt and procrastination at that stage, that's for sure.
So take us through the process. You decided that you wanted to write a book. So what was the purpose? Because there should always be a purpose in something that you're going to do.
Absolutely. As I said, I was leading some clients through what I called an incubator, a mastermind group, but it had a string of training with it. And the clients were getting awesome results. And at that stage, I thought, hey, there is something that I really need to share. The results clients were getting was so outstanding that I thought it would be, in reality, it would be selfish not to share this to a broader audience. And how could I get that message out there so that people could enjoy that experience and help grow their business, you know, improve their confidence and basically improve their focus. And that's what started the whole thing. And that's, you know, and that's when I start talking to you on a different level about putting a book together.
Yeah, because, you know, when you said about the gaining confidence and creating your focus, I feel that that is something that people quite often find a real challenge, just focusing sometimes on one task. I turn my Facebook off. When I have a task to focus on, I turn Facebook off. And I'm on it, you know, just randomly whenever I need to. And I was really surprised yesterday. I was in a business group, part of a business women's group. And one of the women said that she struggled so much with being, you know, being torn to or being led to go onto Facebook because notifications come up and she just can't focus on her job and she wants to go over to Facebook. And I was really surprised at the number of people who also said that they couldn't focus on one job because something like Facebook would interrupt and come in and take their time away. How do you actually get people to focus? What are some of the tips? And speaking from personal experiences as well as business experiences.
Yeah. It's about being really clear about what you're trying to accomplish and understanding how much time you can allocate to what. I was actually reading something this morning from Bradbury, the guy who wrote Emotional Intelligence 2.0, Travis Bradbury, and he was actually saying, you know, his nine things that, you know, very successful people do. And one of them was making sure that, you know, they own their time. And one of those things is, you know, if you're feeling that you're almost addicted to Facebook and you need to keep checking it, set aside, you know, 5 or 10 minutes and set an alarm and just go onto Facebook just for that period of time rather than going in and checking every 2 or 3 minutes. You know, the world's going to go on and Facebook moves very, very quickly. And if you miss a message, that's okay. If somebody wants to send you a personal message, you can scroll down, you know, your feed and find that particular message. So it's not that you're going to miss out on anything. You don't have to catch absolutely every bit of news that's happening in the world and what's happening. It's a matter of catching what's important to you.
That's so true. And sometimes it's a matter of actually just dipping your toe in the water and getting started, isn't it? Because sometimes you are almost afraid to let go of that security blanket or let go of that habit or let go of that thing that is stopping you.
Yeah, but to let go, what we need to do is to replace it with a better habit. And so if you're going to go, okay, so I know that I can't keep going back onto Facebook, you need to allocate your time so that you're doing something that is important and something that's helping you get where you want to go instead. Yeah, and understand that this is why I'm doing this particular thing, because that will keep you focused on that task.
And that comes back to what we initially started talking about, which was your purpose and your purpose for writing your book. So you started writing your book and take us through what happened. Take us through your journey.
Yeah, a lot of people have asked me about, so how did you write, you know, how did you get to write a book? You know, friends that I've known for a long time and people who, you know, are quite intelligent and have a lot of things that they could potentially be sharing. And I said, well, yeah, it is a discipline and you need to get used to that process of writing. And so what I did first was I trained myself to write blogs. I'm not a natural writer. I write just like I talk. So it's not all proper English and everything. And I started telling a story. And my blogs at first really didn't have a lot of, there was no flow to the blogs, but people enjoyed reading them, so that was great. And over time, they did end up having a bit more purpose. And then once I got used to that process of writing, I started getting more focus around that. I then looked at what structure a book would take, and I looked at the flow of what I was doing within those groups and how I was using emotional intelligence to actually help people, you know, create a better business, create more confidence by learning from the experiences that they already had. And that was really, you know, so then all of a sudden I had a three-part book and I knew what to put in each part. And so then I could go about writing, you know, one chapter at a time. And I didn't try and write the whole book at a time. I just sit down and basically I allocated one day a week just to write. And so on Fridays, I would come into the office and I would write, and I had a goal that I wanted to have, you know, approximately 1,500 to 2,000 words in each chapter. So then I would go about doing that. And from that perspective, it helped me really start getting focused about what I need to do that day. I wouldn't log on to any other part of my computer. I just open a Word document and do that.
Wonderful. So as you said before, and this phrase I absolutely love, you owned your own time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And absolutely. So yeah. you basically walk your talk, because in the beginning you said you need to own your own time, you need to replace a habit that is keeping you stuck with a better habit, and that's exactly what you did. And I absolutely love that. So thank you for sharing that. Now, Kevin, life doesn't always run smoothly, as everybody knows. And what happened, or did it even happen, I'm not sure, but what happened if you had someone who said, oh, okay, Kevin, this Friday I really need to see you. I need to, a client comes along and it's a valuable client that you really just can't turn down, or somebody gets sick. Something comes along to interrupt your Friday writing time. How do you actually deal with that?
That was easy. I just explained to them that I was already busy. Quite often we feel that we have to be a slave to our clients. And the reality is we do serve our clients and we are a servant for our clients. But if we're already busy with another client, we would generally not move that appointment to see the one who's just asked us something recently. And it's a remembering what's important to you and what your long-term plan is. I've had a number of situations where I've been talking to people about doing some joint venture work, and we've had a meeting scheduled, and then they bring up at the last minute and go, oh, a client just called and I've got to do that. And to me, it said that what they were telling me was short-term money is more important than my long-term vision. And that was how I took that message. I have a very different view from that. If I've got a long-term vision, then I need to understand what's important. And it's not saying that the client that's just called is not unimportant, but I already have a meeting booked. I've got a meeting with myself. And that's how I treated that. You know, if a client calls and says, hey, can you come and do this? You don't start explaining, oh, well, I can't do that because I'm, and have to explain the whole thing. You just start talking. You just explain that you're busy at that point in time.
So it's actually a matter of setting your priorities and knowing exactly where you want to go and making sure that you stick to the goals that you set yourself.
Absolutely. I mean, Steve Covey has a great model around the four levels of experience, where he talks about what's important and what's urgent, and focusing on making sure that you're doing the important first. And unfortunately, you don't know what's important unless you've decided to sit down and work out what it is that you're really trying to accomplish. And once you know what you're trying to accomplish, you'll know the things that are important, and they can keep coming up to the top.
Okay. That's great advice. I really love all that. And it's great that you talk about setting up a structure, pretty much, and sticking to the goals that you set yourself so that you can actually attain them. So, okay, let's move forward. So you finished your book, and how long did it actually take you to finish your book?
Oh, that's a confusing question.
To actually write your book.
the writing part of it. If I was to sit down and do that in a normal standard work week, it probably would have taken 2 to 3 weeks of time. It took me about 6 months to write the book, because I was at just allocating the one day a week scenario. And then I would obviously keep reading other information as I was writing it. And I did actually have the book, what I thought to be finished, read something, and then have to go and do a rewrite at the last third of the book, because the information there was just so relevant and it just put a slightly different spin on what I had that was going to improve the content so much.
And that's what happens, that you might start off with one idea and you start writing, but then you can go off and things will change, because things do change over time. So you wrote your book. Sorry, Kevin, go on.
Yeah, and the pace of change is happening all the time. It's increasing all the time. And working with one particular client, he's in project management. He's devised a way that you can have project management that isn't a strict structure per se. And I think that's important in whatever you're going to do with your business, to not have structures that are so rigid that they can't allow for improvement and allow for the goalpost changing, because the goalpost will always change. That's something that I can guarantee you.
That's very true. Now, Kevin, within your book, you actually talk a bit about your life and your when you grew up and your things that you did with the football and whatever. So for those people who haven't had a chance to read your book yet, let's just explore a bit of your background and how you started, because you rode to quite a wave of success and then you had a bit of a bombshell that occurred, GFC time, and you had to went right down and you had to start again. And this is such an integral part of the show, being able to show people for our listeners to actually hear a true story of someone who has gone and made it, and then they've had some adversity in their life and they've had to start again. Take us through your background.
Yeah, so from leaving school, I went in and started accounting. I actually joined IBM back in the glory days of IBM when it was the biggest computer company in the world. And so that was quite a coup to be selected as a cadet for IBM. It was an accounting cadet. So how do you end up, you know, writing a book when you started out life as an accountant was quite an interesting experience. From there, I worked for a number of Fortune 500 companies and ended up in recruitment with Adecco. You know, they were the world's largest recruiter, and I was in their accounting recruitment model and actually grew to be a state manager for them. So, and that was all very exciting. It gave me a background both in accounting, but then also in sales and sales management. And I was actually a state manager for them, so I had a lot of P&L responsibility, which is quite interesting. To then go out and start your own business, you find out one day all of a sudden it's like, hey, all those little things that used to just get done by someone, and half the time someone you knew and half the time someone you didn't even know that needed to be done, and you had to do absolutely everything yourself. And so starting out in my own business was quite daunting. You know, 6 months in, all of a sudden you realize there's all this other stuff that I didn't know had to be done, and is this business ever going to succeed? But slowly but surely it does, and we had some ups and downs with that business. And one of the challenges that business had was we never really had anything, we never had a greater plan. It was always, let's have some fun, let's build some money, have some fun, and grow the business that way. And that literally was the core focus of the business. When in 2001 there was a recession and the business toppled, we went from 8 staff back to 2. Then again, when the GFC hit, prior to the GFC, we had a turnover of about $3.5 million. We had 15 staff. We were on Queen Street Mall, which is the high street of Brisbane. And life was going along well. It seemed to be, almost easy to be making money, although the business was a little inconsistent. When the GFC hit, everything turned off. The revenue fell from $3.5 million to less than $500,000 within a year. We lost $250,000 personally, and that's not accounting for how much the banks withdrew from helping fund us and that sort of stuff. So it became quite a dilemma, and I've got to say I thought I was the business back then. And with that, it really affected my self-esteem. It affected everything about me, and I kind of went into a shell and really withdrew a lot. I've got to say it wasn't a good time in my life.
No, that's a huge loss. And because you were in a partnership at that time with that particular business, weren't you?
I was. And at that stage, my business partner had recently just had a child and had decided that he was going to work 40 hours a week. Our rental loan was $200,000 a year. And so it was, we weren't, to cover our rent, we needed to bill $17,000 a month just to cover the rent. And so that was absolutely daunting when, nobody wanted staff. So we had to rent out our offices. We had to do a whole load of stuff. Yeah, and it, over the next 2 years, it became apparent that, you know, I felt that the recruitment model was broken, where people were paid for the stuff. And I can recall actually sitting down and I was reaching out to a former colleague who had gone into coaching 12 years prior. And I was on interview. I didn't really notice it, but I can recall, you know, as clear as anything, I was standing on Water Street about 500 metres from the office and calling Peter and saying, look, you know, Peter, you know, he said, well, how would you sum it up? And I said, Peter, I think the recruitment model's broken. I've got no answer for it. I said, I believe my partnership model's broken and I've got no answer for that. And I've got to be honest, I think I'm broken. And I was just saying it so matter-of-factly. It was like I was almost watching myself. Saying it now, I'm more emotional than I was at the time. Which is quite funny.
And that is something that is actually something that a lot of people find hard to do, and men in particular, to actually admit or even have the self-awareness that you could be broken or that you feel broken. How did you even come to that realization?
Oh, it's okay. It did take really hitting rock bottom for me to realise that. We had almost no revenue in the business. Struggling to make ends meet would be an understatement. We'd become experts at juggling cash flow and negotiating with the tax office to pay the tax bill later. It was an exceptionally challenging time, and I really did emotionally have to hit rock bottom before that. To be honest, there was a day where I sat there and did the numbers on, you know, if I was to end my life, this could get the business out of the debt and help my business partner, because I didn't have a partner at the time. Now, that thought lasted for seconds, and I went, that's bloody stupid, and get on with life. But I had to go through that before I realised that, hey, I needed to reach out and ask for help. So I hope other people don't have to go to that extreme and never get to that extreme and ask for help.
And I really appreciate you sharing that, because that is something that is, you can even hear that it's very raw and very honest. So good on you for actually having the courage to share that, Kevin. So thank you. Now, you did overcome insurmountable odds and to work through all that and to move forward. And I guess sometimes, though, we need to draw back on our personal life experiences of something that may have affected us deeply in our personal lives. And before we go on and to talk about how successful you are today, take us back to your personal life. When you were married and what happened there?
It just seems like a tale of woe and tread. And I've got to be honest, I've really enjoyed most of my life. not a hell of a lot of change. However, when I was married, we found out my wife was pregnant quite unexpectedly. And at the time, we weren't sure whether we were excited about it or not, but we grew excited about it over the next, over that ensuing period of time. However, at 20 weeks, we found that the best chance that our baby had would be to be stillborn. So we actually had to make a decision to have quite a late termination of the pregnancy. And so for a long time, you know, being a boy that grew up in the 60s and 70s where men, you know, just suppressed any emotion and everything, I was going to say Melissa, which is my current partner. After Kristen had the baby, that's okay. When I call her Kristen, she doesn't get really happy about it either. After she had the baby, I kind of suppressed that. And okay, I'm here. I've got to be, you know, I've got to be strong and support her and help her and everything. And each time she started to get happy, she would blame herself for being happy and say that she shouldn't be because of what she had made terminating our baby mean. And over the next 2 years, that situation caused the breakup of our marriage. But because I had pushed the feelings below, I didn't think that it had really affected me very much. I just thought that, you know, on a very superficial level, you know, I'll be okay, you know, I'll be strong. And but I never got into long-term relationships for a long, long period of time. And then I realized that I wasn't doing that. And I could see that there was a correlation or an incongruence between the fact that I wanted to be in a relationship, but I didn't trust women. Long story. And once I fixed that, I was able to go into a relationship, but I still didn't take it to the very next level and look for what other patterns, where else had I had that affect different things in my life. Until recently, when I realized that...
Continue. I was going to ask you about how long did it actually take you to basically admit that?
To fully admit, even at the first level of my mistrust of women, that took me up until about a little over 10 years ago, which is more than 10 years after we had to terminate the pregnancy. So that was. 10 years of living in that. At the time I didn't think anything was wrong, so you don't notice it. It's a true scenario. The next part was I actually realized that, you know, when I created my first business, we had no long range planning. We wouldn't do any reporting. We did all everything to create a successful business most of the time. And so it wasn't until recently that I looked at why I wasn't doing any long-range planning with my business. And part of that was about, you know, the shock of when things don't go according to plan. You know, all of a sudden we were starting to plan for having a baby and everything, and then all of a sudden that was taken away from me. And partly what I personally made that mean was that there was no point in planning for the long term because it probably won't happen anyway. And so it wasn't until recently that I was able to go, hang on, that's just not true. You know, you can plan for the long term. You need to create a responsive plan. Things are going to change and that's okay. You can be happy with that. But if you have a plan in place, you'll be far better off than if you just drift from short term to short term to short term.
And is that something that you tend to work through with your clients, that you actually sit down and create a plan, but a responsive plan? Take us through what exactly is a responsive plan.
Well, a lot of coaches get their clients to dream the biggest dream they possibly could. I actually get my clients to give me a picture of what they can truly see at the edge of their capabilities, what they could achieve in their business. So how can we go? Let's talk about what the dream is, but let's see how far they can actually see that their confidence can carry them at this point in time. And I help them become great at getting there. And quite often I find that they end up getting there far faster than they thought they were going to. And then what we're able to do is push that plan out and keep it moving in the direction of their dream, so that they can attain that dream more quickly than if they weren't making positive steps towards it. So instead of just holding on to the dream, I find a lot of people have a big dream of their business. I'm talking to some clients that have a trade business at the moment, and they've got a dream of having tradespeople all around Australia and potentially even taking that internationally. But their dream is so far removed from where they are today that there's no, even in their mind, it's still a little bit unreal. And so what I've done with them is go, okay, so let's look at where could you be this time next year? When I started working with them, it's less than 6 months ago, they were turning over less than $300,000 and they'll be more than $1 million business by June next year. They've already got contracts in place. So they've had massive growth because they're just growing, not so much just within their comfort zone, but within the realms of what they believe is already possible, because the other part they didn't believe. So what we'll do is we'll go, okay, so now that you've got a $1 million business, if you were to act like you had a $5 million business or maybe even just a $3 million business, how would you have to act to get that? And so that we can start putting in place plans of how they, who they have to be to lead that particular business and constantly helping push that out.
That's great, Kevin. For anyone who's just tuned in, we are talking to Kevin Gammey, author, mentor and coach. And if you would like to call in and ask him a question, you can dial in on 646-716-7979. That's 646-716-7979. Now, Kevin, Kathy Jones from Sure Thing Photography, which is a newborn and family photography business, she's actually asked a question on Facebook in relation. Hers is a brand new business. She is up on the Sunshine Coast, and she photographs newborns and families together, which is very nice. And she asks, what's the best way to advertise and get customers?
Now, that's a great question. How do we get customers? And whether it's advertising or whether it's by, in traditional sense, or whether it's by PR or whether it's by through social media, it's really about understanding who your customer is. Now, obviously, being newborn and family, you've got a really well-defined market. Even within that, depending on the price point that you're charging and the style with which you're doing your photography, there's going to be a more defined market than trying to market to the entire world. And so having a better picture of who exactly is your ideal client will help you start to profile that client, help you start to understand where are they going to be. The more you understand your client, the more you'll understand, are they going to be on Facebook? And if they are, what sort of groups are they going to be in? And if they're in groups, you can look at family photography, newborn and family photographers that will charge, $150 a session, and others are charging $1,500 a session. But they're targeting different people. And to charge $1,500 a session, you have to know exactly what your client is getting out of it rather than they're buying photos. So people aren't going to a photographer just to get some photos. They can get that off their phone. So what they're looking for with a professional photographer is the feeling that they get from having those photos and capturing the essence of the family. So it needs to, your message needs to be more around, exactly what your clients are getting from what you do. Now, without knowing that, that's something for you to define more properly, exactly, and ask current clients. That's the way I went about finding out what my clients were looking for, is I just kept asking clients.
And I love that. And one thing, because you hear quite often when you're in business and one of the first questions is, how do I get customers? How do I get clients? And you'll hear quite often, define your market. But the thing that I love that you said was profile your clients. I feel that's a really, really important step, because it actually takes you deeper rather than just saying, I'm marketing to 40 plus women who are feeling overwhelmed with technology, which is a broad statement for what I do. But to actually go deeper and actually profile your clients and create those avatars is really important. I also love the make your message clear. And making your message clear pertains not only to, I think, business, but to personal life as well. Because if you can't make your own message, whatever you're trying to get across, and communicate well, it's going to affect all relationships, isn't it?
Absolutely. If you're blowing in the wind, I spend a lot of my time doing that. And you can have fun in the moment, but you probably won't. You can be happy in the moment, you probably won't be happy with life at the end of the day. Is a big difference. So happiness is such a strange thing. And there's a book by Sean A. called The Happiness Advantage. And it talks about the difference of being happy in the moment and happy with life. And when I think about that, it's like, when people talk to me about procrastination, and even overwhelm, I talk to them about the fact that, the challenge is that we've got two selves that are at war at that point in time. We've got our self that's in the moment now, and he's got a bit of an unfair advantage because he's here. And we've got our future self that, you know, is desiring to have a great life. And so our self now wants a great life, our self in the future wants a great life, but there may be, you know, some challenges for our current self to get through before our future self is going to have the life that they want to have. Unfortunately, because he's here right now, unless he listens to the future self, he can make some really bad choices and really silly choices. Or she can make some really silly choices, because it is so easy just to get caught up in being busy rather than doing things purposefully to achieve an outcome. I mean, none of us love to study, but at some point in time, we've all had to learn the skills that we've currently got. Now, at first, when you learn a new skill, you suck at it and it's awkward and it's cumbersome and it's clumsy and yet you absolutely hate that feeling. But if you didn't go through that feeling once upon a time, then you'd never get to where you are today. And so that's the argument of the current self accepting some pain so that you can have a better life in the future.
That's really wise advice. And I guess a lot of it comes down to self-awareness. Do you have any particular mantras that you use or any particular books that you read that really help you identify yourself and being able to have that self-awareness?
I did a bit of research in relation to emotional intelligence. And for me, the three core pillars of emotional intelligence was really about having that self-awareness first and stopping and looking at, if you're not achieving what you want, I was going to say man up in my situation. If I'm applying it to myself, man up and go, hey, I'm not getting the results I want, and so I've got to do something different. But I don't know what to do different until I can do some analysis of why am I getting those results. And don't dwell on it, but just be really pragmatic and look at it as if you were analysing somebody else and go, well, hang on, why isn't Kevin getting what he wants? And put down a quick list. So what do we really want to achieve? And then set a really solid platform for what you do want. So rather than have a list of these are the things I don't want, start having a list of the things that you do want, because then you can start acting towards analysing the skill set you need, and how you and who you need to be to get those things. You know, because self, the first part is to take that honest look at yourself. The second part is then to have the discipline to be the person who gets those things. And to make sure that you're constantly being that person. That's not saying go out and be someone fake or, but throughout life, we reinvent ourselves a number of times. You know, when we were younger, we were very dependent. We go through our teenage years and we just determine our own personality and characteristics, and that's great. You know, later on in life, we decide that we want to have a partner. We become part of a couple. And we've just reinvented ourselves at each of those phases. So reinventing yourself is something that we do very naturally as human beings. But when someone starts talking to people quite often about it, they go, oh, but don't I have to be fake? But it's not about being fake. It's about being really genuine about being the person who you want to be.
So I love that, be genuine about the person you want to be. So we've got self-awareness, and this actually pertains not only to business but to anything you want in your life, whether it's just to lose those few extra kilos when you're coming into summer like us Aussies are, or whether you actually want to sit down and write that book you've been thinking about for the last, you know, 10 years or whatever it is that you want to achieve. So you've got your self-awareness and you've got the discipline. And what was the third pillar that is a core pillar?
The third part is looking at is to look at what you do. As you're doing the things that you do, is that helping you? Is that getting the results that you desire? How is that affecting you and your world and the world around you? And then constantly improving doing that. It's called efficacy. So it's effective efficiency. And you need to start being effective first and efficient second, because if we're trying to be efficient without being effective, we can just go on the wrong tangent completely. So it's about working out what is effective in helping us get to where we're wanting to go, or helping us create the relationships that we want to have. And let's face it, getting where we want to go is about creating great relationships that take us where we want to go. and whether that's in business or whether that's personally. Business is about great relationships. And so as we're building those relationships, we need to be looking, is this, am I serving my client well? And if so, keep doing more of that, but find more effective ways of doing that or more efficient ways of doing that and still producing the same result. And so it's that constant evolution. If you know, Tony Robbins talks about constant and never-ending improvement. You know, every single coach or motivational speaker will have a version of constant and never-ending improvement. You know, the world talks about Kaizen and process improvement and all that sort of stuff. But on a personal level, we do that all the time. You know, when we were a kid, we would have put our hand on the hot plate at least once, hopefully just once. Most of us stop doing it after the first time, but occasionally it takes a few times to learn. So it's that, you know, we don't do things that we know are bad for us.
Right, that's so true. Although sometimes when we know that having that extra piece of chocolate is not going to be that great for us, we still go ahead and do it.
We can take it to extremes. So we're not perfect.
No, nobody is perfect, although we like to think some other people are when we look at their life, not knowing exactly what's going on in their life. Now, Kevin, something I would like to now talk about, we've got just under 20 minutes left, so let's go right back to the beginning with you and your business, and you hit rock bottom and you had that self-awareness and you drew on your experiences from your previous marriage somewhere deep down inside to help you get through a lot of what you went through. Now, in order to actually climb back up and become as successful as you are now, how does one actually do that? How do you, when you are feeling down and out and you are feeling broken and you are feeling that, whether it be that you've lost a child, whether your marriage has broken up, whether your business has gone bust, whatever your circumstance, what steps does somebody take to get back on top of things again?
Baby steps. It really is taking small steps at first, but getting some outside support. You know, I went and found a coach that was well regarded in the industry, that had a very big toolkit, and he used all of the resources he had, and he did a magnificent job. It took me 3 months to actually refine my sense of humour, but I eventually found that, which was great. You know, from there, we spent 3 months working on me before we even started thinking about anything about the business. And thinking about anything about myself in my current business. And at that stage, it was with a plan that I was just going to stay within that current business. But I realized along that journey that I wasn't my business. And that was a really awesome realization. It's something that very much is at the heart of what I teach these days to help people understand that they are not their business. And so the business can have great times and business can have tough times, but that's because of things that you do. That's not because of who you are. So if your business is having a tough time, there's no need for you to sit down and get quite anxious and depressed about that. It's time for you to start making some changes in what you're doing. And so that's a great thing. So it was really about gaining baby steps and taking some small wins and then basically coming to a realization that you do have choices. Every step of the way, you've got a choice. That, you know, putting yourself back in control of your life, and that the fact that you do own your life, because I'd forgotten that. I thought I was, you know, basically the result of what everything else was happening as opposed to I had choices. So always remember that you've got choices. And the fact is that we are the sum of our choices. So who we are today is because of all the choices that we've ever made. So if we want to change things, we need to start making some different choices. I remember watching Seinfeld, and you know, George Costanza, you know, being your ultimate loser, one day comes to the realization that, you know, hey, he is a loser, and so if he needs to change his life, he needs to do the exact opposite of everything that he's ever decided. And so instead of, you know, from that day, he starts, his life starts to change, and he ends up getting a job with the New York Yankees and all that sort of stuff. So silly example, but it's true. If we want to be someone, if we want a different result, we've got to make a different choice.
So you would basically say there are sort of three things that people need to do. They need to start with baby steps, and
yep.
that is just one day at a time, step by step. And they need to get some outside support, and
yep.
they need to remember that they have choices.
Yeah.
Now, you had – sorry, go on.
Yeah, and it really comes back to what we were saying about before is, you know, that awareness that, hey, I'm not where I need to. I'm not who I want to be, or my business isn't in a position I want. Okay, so we need to start making some baby steps. We need to start thinking about where is it going, and then getting that outside help. At that stage, the outside help for me was about creating the discipline around, you know, okay, so what do we need to start doing? And he used some tools to help me, to give me some different steps and processes to start, you know, realizing that all of a sudden when it came to any situation, that it was up to me. I did have a choice in every single situation. And as you're doing those choices, keep looking forward to where you're wanting to be, and make sure that your choices are leading you there.
And what sort of strategies would you employ to actually be able to even just start doing that? Because some people, they may be not as confident, not as self-aware, and they're sort of feeling like they're floundering and not sure, you know, where to start. They go, okay, well, baby steps, but, you know, how do I start baby steps if I don't even know what the baby steps should be?
I love that question. Sometimes, and when you're really stuck, baby steps in any direction is fantastic. It doesn't matter. Just do something different. Because, you know, to start with, it's much easier to steer something if it's already moving. You know, think about your car, or a car traditionally without power steering. If the car wasn't moving, it was really hard to turn the steering wheel. But as soon as it was moving, it was much easier to steer in the direction that you wanted it to go. So if you're thinking, you know, but baby steps where? Just pick anything and start doing that. You know, remember when you started driving, how challenging that was to try and remember that, you know, okay, am I, you know, my right foot's on the accelerator, in America the opposite, you know, so one, which foot's on the accelerator, which foot, you know, where's the brake, where's the clutch, you know, changing gears, and hey, there's people coming at us and the car's moving forward, and it just took every single little bit of your senses to drive. And these days, you know, going along 20, 30 years later, you can hardly remember how you got home from the office. Because it was just so, you were busy driving, but you were busy doing 16 other things in your mind as well at the same time. And with that, it's just getting a little bit of momentum. We're going to suffer. Whatever you do for the first time, accept the fact that nobody starts out being an expert. We all start out really sucking at whatever we do for the first time. But it's only those that become an expert, or those that master their craft, are because they're prepared to go through the pain barrier of failure a number of times and keep doing it. There's a story about Michael Jordan being cut from the high school basketball team, and he's practiced more than any other athlete and missed more shots than anybody else and everything else that enabled him to be that athlete. And if you look at anyone who is wildly successful, it's because they've been prepared to fail more often. And it is that situation that, you know, I don't feel like I've had a life full of failures, and yet Tan's brought up a whole lot of situations that, hey, that must be really challenging, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, crap, you know, I just thought that was my life, I thought I had a pretty good life, you know, until now.
You have. You've had a great life, I do recognise that. But you are hugely successful now, and you have utilized all these strategies and all the tips that you've been given us. You've utilized all of those to get back to where you are now. So I guess it's being able to show people that, you know what, there really is a light at the end of the tunnel. You may not see it right now, and a lot of people have been there where when they look back, they go, oh my goodness, I was in such a bad place and I really didn't think I could ever, ever get out of it and be where I am today. And people like you, Kevin, just show that that really can happen. You know, it's really important that when you are stuck in a rut, like you said, just do something. Whether it starts off as talking to somebody, whether it starts off as just being as simple as making a decision. And it doesn't matter if your thing that you're going through is something as bad as having cancer or being terminally ill, or whether it's a teenager who has had a fight with a friend. For each person it's different, and I think your steps and things that you've talked to us about really apply to any situation at all. So I really love what you've done and what you've shown. So you are hugely successful now. You run a fantastic business. You're growth mentors. You mentor small businesses and help them get on track. You run coaching programs for small groups and individuals. And you have your book out. So with your book, Finding Your Business Mojo, now that's available now on Kindle. Is that correct? But the paper version will be coming out, the hard copy, a little bit later?
You can actually get it. If you go onto Amazon and you type in either Kevin Gammy or Finding Your Business Mojo, you'll find the book, and then there'll be the Kindle version. There will also be paper copies available. It hasn't officially launched. There was another coach another guy who had been coaching, who I had known from a former life, that just found me when I started talking about my book coming out on Facebook, and then he started stalking me. It was really quite bizarre, and he actually was asking me, when is it getting up? When is it getting up? And he actually bought the very first copy of it 2 weeks ago, and he just said it's just changed the way he views the world. He's, you know, for him it took a very different look at things that he didn't realise kind of applied to his business life. Because you know, in small business, we do our lives and our business lives are so intermingled that even as a leader in a bigger business, it's the same. You know, what happens to us at home, you know, it comes to the office with us. And so it's about using emotional intelligence in a business sense and being aware of what you're trying to create, you know, what you need to do, creating a process to get there, and then constantly looking, is this being effective? So, yeah, he was quite. He said, "Look, this is truly unique. I've never heard anyone talk about business like this before," and he was very, very excited about it. He said, "So when can I start becoming a coach of this?" You know, so that was really exciting to see. You know, for me, a dream of my last 5 years start to come into fruition, because it's been, you know, it has been a long road for me putting this together. You know, as you said, I've come from, you know, from 2000 and. You know, back in 2009, 10, 11 and 12 and coming out from there into having this now and then going, okay, I can see that I can start creating a coaching program around this that coaches can use as well, which is really exciting.
It is absolutely exciting. So take us through the next part of your life, Kevin. So where to from here?
So it's really exciting. For me, I'm getting more and more excited every day. You see, Finding a Business Mojo is really about helping business owners create a brand for their business and get an awareness for what their business and who their business really is. And it's really just that first level of success. For me, it's like 40,000 people a year go to Everest, okay? Now, the majority of them just go to Everest Base Camp. But there's still 40,000 people a year go to Everest Base Camp, and it's a 10-day hike in and 10-day hike out. And that's an awesome adventure for a lot of people. 2% of people then decide that they're going to go up the top, and there's different camps along the way going up. And, you know, for me, Finding a Business Mojo is really that first journey, and it's basically about creating a successful business that is giving you the life and lifestyle that you desire. But if you want to take it further, there's more stages involved. And there's about helping your business really focus on driving profitability and putting the right processes in your business that will really drive the profitability. Now, all businesses have processes, but this is about turning a business that really runs on its processes. And then it's about kicking your leadership. So that'll be camp one. Camp two is really about kicking your leadership up to the next level, where you're developing leaders within your business and you're teaching them how to lead teams within business. So many small business owners are holding on to all the little bits and pieces around their business and not giving other people full responsibility and full creativity and full leadership of what their area of the business. And so it's about really kicking it up to that next level. And that's really like base camp. That's really like camp two. Camp three is where you're starting to look for, okay, so how can we really streamline and automate this business so that we can potentially even scale it and create other models of it or expand it out as far as we desire. So I can start seeing that happening. And I'm looking at a program that's going to be called, you know, the Four Seasons of Success, where each quarter will go about creating your business mojo, about really focusing on the processes and the value streams within your business, about then really refining the leadership that you have and taking it up to the next level, and then seeking automation. And they'll be your four seasons of success, and they're four very distinct levels. The challenge with business is that because there's no written rules, we don't realize, it's a bit like a video game. You've got to do stage one before you can succeed at stage two. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to automate a business that we don't have processes in, and that's never going to work.
And that's absolutely exciting. Sounds really, really wonderful. And is that going to be just a program, or is that going to be put into, are you going to have another book coming out shortly, Kevin?
Of course there'll be another book, Tam. I've really enjoyed, look, I struggled through the process of writing this first book, but I have really enjoyed the experience of it and grown so much throughout that time. It truly has been awesome.
That's great. Look, we have just a couple of minutes left, and if you could just very quickly answer Jeanette Mundy from Jeanette Mundy Coaching. She says, what are the indicators, financial or otherwise, that tell you it's time to hire help in the areas that you don't want to wear a particular hat, such as managing accounts, planning and managing projects, social media, etc.? Can you answer that in less than a minute 30?
Yeah, it's all about the time-money continuum. You see, rich people will hire someone to do something for them and they will save time. Whereas when we start out, we have lots of time but not a lot of money, and so we have to chew up the time to do those things. So it really comes into a combination of, you know, can you afford it responsibly as you are moving forward? But the faster you can get people to do the things that you're not great at, the quicker your business will grow. So it's about pushing the envelope a little bit on that time-money continuum and, you know, take good risks, take sensible risks when you are selecting people to help you in different areas, different fields.
That's a great answer. Listen, Kevin, just before we go, people can find you, they can find your book under Finding Your Business Mojo over at Amazon. And where can they actually find you or contact you?
It's easy to contact me if you want to contact kevin@growthmentors.com.au. If you leave a message in Finding Your Business Mojo, you can find me there. If you Google me, you'll find me in a heartbeat. I do run a Facebook community of almost 3,000 people these days. So if you do hunt me down on Facebook and send me a private message, I'm sure to answer.
Great. Been great talking to you. Thank you so much, Kevin. Have a great day.
Thanks very much, Tan. Thanks for the time. Thank you for listening.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
on Fire Radio.